Time for our weekly edition of the Middle East Report, and we're joined by James Dorsey. Good morning, James, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for joining us once again. With Russia entangled in Ukraine, Syria may be up for grabs. With Iran and the United Arab Emirates prime contenders, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad recently visited both Tehran and Abu Dhabi.
Indeed. Obviously, Russia is preoccupied with Ukraine. It has moved troops from Ukraine, from Syria to Ukraine. Supposedly, it has also moved some of its mercenaries from Russia to Ukraine, and someone has to fill that void. Clearly, the Syrians are looking to Iran to do that, or at least that's one address they're looking at. And the Iranians obviously would want to have a role in the reconstruction, post-war reconstruction of Syria, which is big business. At the same time, the United Arab Emirates has been sort of serving as a platform for Syria, for Bashar al-Assad, to return to the Arab fold. Keep in mind that the Arab League had suspended Syrian membership at the beginning of the Syrian civil war more than a decade ago. That return to the Arab fold is both politically and economically important to Bashar al-Assad. Clearly also, the UAE may have more money to spend than Tehran.
The International Atomic Energy Agency rings alarm bells about undeclared uranium enrichment has stopped European Union officials' flights to salvage Iranian nuclear talks.
Indeed. So what's at stake at the moment is the future, if there is a future, for the international agreement that was concluded in 2015 to curb the Iranian nuclear program. The United States, under Donald Trump, walked away from that agreement in 2018. And the United States, Europe, Russia, and China, too, have been negotiating since the arrival in the White Office of Joe Biden to try and revive that agreement. And we're now at a make-or-break stage, which makes these two developments very important. On the one hand, the statement by the Secretary General of the International Atomic Energy Agency that there are undisclosed places in, or signs that there are undisclosed sites in Iran where uranium is being enriched. That's extremely important because it has to do with the so-called breakout time. With other words, how long would it take Iran to produce a nuclear weapon? And the critics of the of a revival of the accord are saying revival makes no sense because the breakout time is a matter of weeks, no longer a matter of months, let alone years. Now, at the same time that that is happening, you have a very senior European Union official visiting Tehran to try and break the deadlock in the nuclear negotiations. And that deadlock centers at the moment on a demand that the United States take the Revolutionary Guards off the off its terrorism list, something that both the Israelis and the Gulf states oppose. The compromise formula may be that the guards as such are taken off the list, but certain constituent elements of the guards, like the Jerusalem Quds Force, remain on the list.
Moving further, Emirati company looks for anti-Muslim brotherhood and anti-Tunisian freelance writer.
Indeed. So the United Arab Emirates has for quite some time and at quite some cost to itself as well as to others been on a campaign against political Islam. And it has, since for all practical matters, interfered in various countries, be it Egypt in 2013 with the military coup and the support for the military coup, the war in Libya, but also elsewhere, including support of far-right, somewhat Islamophobic tendencies in Europe. It has also done the same in Tunisia, where you have the president for all practical matters, having unilaterally grabbed power in what is becoming increasingly one-man rule. In that context, a UAE firm, a public relations firm, has put out an advertisement for a writer, a freelance writer in Tunisia. And when various candidates phoned the company to get more information on the job, they were told that it would be a job to write against Rashid Ranouchi, the leader of the Ennahda party, which has become a sort of Muslim democratic party, but many still associate with the Muslim Brotherhood, as well as other opposition figures. So in other words, this is clearly a job that is designed to manipulate, or in any case, influence public opinion in Tunisia on behalf of Kais Saied, the current president.
The Qatar Emir hopes that during the visit to Germany to iron out differences in negotiations for gas sales that would reduce Germany's dependence on Russian energy.
Indeed. So you have a very clear difference between the way Qatar and the way on the one hand, and on the other hand, Saudi Arabia and the UAE have approached the energy fallout of the Ukraine crisis, whereas the UAE and Saudi Arabia have refused to increase oil production in an effort to reduce prices. Qatar is has declared its willingness to talk to the Europeans about ways of reducing dependency on Russian energy by supplying gas to Europe. The issue here is that there are different interests at stake. So, with other words, Europe needs to reduce its dependence on Russia now. But on the long term, Europe is moving towards renewables and non-fossil fuel oils. That sort of creates a problem with the Qatari business approach, which is long-term gas delivery contracts, usually 20 years, which is what the Qataris are offering the Germans. But that would mean that the Germans, the German goal of going to basically 100% carbon free within about 20 years and concluding agreements with Qatar would be in conflict with each other. At the same time, there are issues over the pricing of the gas. The hope is that Sheikh Tamim, the Qatari Emir, during a tour of Europe, of which Germany is one crucial stopping point, that they'll be able to resolve those differences.
Yes, we'll look out to see what happens from that. James, as always, thank you very much for availing yourself and sharing the valuable information. You have a lovely day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Good well.